So thank you very all for coming. The talks, as I say, showcasing the work that is going on in disability history at Swansea University. My name is David Turner. I'm Bachelor of History here at the university. I lead a project looking at the impact of the Industrial Revolution on disability in Britain. Talks continue tomorrow at this time with Dr. Mike Manton, who'll be talking about sport and leisure for deaf and disabled children in the late 19th and early 20th century. And then finally on Thursday, Dr. Daniel Blackie will be talking about this project on disability and the Industrial Revolution. So those are our talks. I'm going to kick things off today with a talk called Admiration or Exploitation, Disabled People and Sporting Events Before the 20th Century. So the history of the modern Paralympic movement began in 1944 when the neurosurgeon Ludwig Guttmann was asked to run a specialist spinal injuries centre at the Stoke Mandeville Hospital in Aylesbury. Sport was seen by Guttmann as an important part of therapy for disabled soldiers. The first annual Stoke Mandeville Summer Games began in 1948, and they continued at Stoke Mandeville until 1960, when the Games moved to Rome and were held in the aftermath of the Olympics. I'm not going to talk about modern Paralympic sport in today's lecture. If you're interested in that, there's a good introductory history on the International Paralympic Committee website. What I want to talk about today is about the role of sport in the lives of disabled people much further back than the second part of the 20th century. The history of disabled people's involvement in sport doesn't begin in 1944 with Guttmann and Stoke Mandeville. Sport was used in the rehabilitation of ex-servicemen in the aftermath of the First World War, and it was extended to the rehabilitation of those injured in the industrial workplace, such as the injured coal miners that we're looking at as part of our project on disability and the Industrial Revolution. As Mike Manton will talk about tomorrow, even further back in the late 19th century, new specialist institutions for the education and training of deaf and disabled children included sport, games and leisure in their curriculum, seeing sport as important for the socialisation and therapy of their pupils and inmates. But I want to go even further back in time to the 18th century today, where we find a series of newspaper reports recording sporting events involving competitors whom we've now see as disabled. Now, the term disabled is not one which is widely used in this particular period of history. It was, we do find it used at this time, but it's usually in a very specific context, referring to those maimed on the battlefield. So the term disabled is often only applied to soldiers and sailors, not to the broader population. When we look at newspapers, we find very interesting stories popping up from time to time. Take this example from the Public Advertiser from Monday, the 24th of October, 1768. On Saturday evening, it said, between 5 and 6 o'clock, a man with a wooden leg ran, or rather hopped, around St. Paul's Churchyard in London for a guinea and 2 gallons of beer. This article doesn't give us very much in the way of other information. We don't know the circumstances of the wager, or what exactly he was rating. I expect, by the way it's presented, this is a race against time, possibly against the chimes of the cathedral bell. Despite an impressive performance, the wooden-legged man lost the bet because a coach crossed his path just before he reached the finish line. And this story shows some typical elements of sporting contests involving people with disabilities in this period. It involved the wagering or betting of large amounts of money and the involvement often of drink. Thanks to the development of daily newspapers, such events are becoming more publicly visible in the second half of the 18th century, although wagers involving physically disabled or blind competitors can be traced back to medieval times. My talk today looks at these types of events and what they tell us about the involvement of disabled people in sport in history and the attitudes towards disability that they reveal. Now, I've just mentioned that the word disabled is used in quite a different sense, or a more specific sense at least, in the 18th century than today. And sport itself is very different in the 18th century compared to how we understand and enjoy it today. Sporting events were by and large amateur rather than professional. They're mostly ad hoc events, or linked to the seasonal calendar of parish festivals, fairs, and so on. There were local variations in the rules and versions of particular games, and there was, by modern standards, a strong element of cruelty. In the 18th century, you could go to watch sports involving the baiting of various animals, such as dogs fighting bulls or cocks fighting each other. So sport is very different then to sport today, but there are some modern elements emerging. This is the era, the late 18th century, when modern sports such as cricket and boxing were becoming more formalised and rules becoming increasingly standardised. There's also a good deal of interest in sport in the press through sports reports and daily newspapers, and through specialist sports publications like the Sporting Magazine, which began in the 1790s, which is a fascinating publication. It contains results of various sporting matches. It also includes articles on veterinary science. If you're having trouble with your racehorse or your fighting cock or your greyhound, you could go there for advice. And it also included a large poetry section, which is something that you don't find in the sports pages today. I could spend the rest of this talk going on about the Sporting Magazine, but I'll move on and talk about... So how do people with disabilities fit into this late 18th century sporting culture? Historians face a number of problems when using the evidence to try and answer that question. Much of the evidence comes from newspapers, which often adopted a satirical or humorous tone when describing events involving disabled competitors. It's easy to assume that events were cruel, exploitative, or not taken very seriously by those involved, because that was often the tone of the reporting. The truth of the stories in the press is also difficult to discern. We find the repetition of a number of common themes coming up again and again, which leads you perhaps to wonder about whether things actually happened in the way in which they were described. It's difficult to access the opinions of those who took part or those who watched these spectacles. And the attitudes of competitors and spectators may not have been the same, as I'll talk about a bit later. When we're looking at disability in particular, we find that certain types of impairment are much more visible than others, and events involving amputees are particularly well publicised in the newspapers at the time. Events involving other kinds of disabled competitors are virtually very difficult to find. You know, they're certainly not represented in the same kind of way. Likewise, all the examples I've found involve male competitors rather than female. That's not to say that races or other kinds of events involving female disabled competitors weren't happening at this time, but they weren't reported in the press. And for those who are used to kind of modern way of reporting about sport, a lot of the details in these reports are vague or unclear. So we don't always know much about the distance people were running. We don't often know the score in competitive matches. It's quite difficult to get to the sort of detailed aspects of sporting events described. So we have to bear all these points in mind when we look at the examples that we're going to come on to now. Right, first I'm going to talk about the three particular types of sporting events, and starting off by talking about races. And of all the events recorded in the press, the most common were running races of various kinds. The most common scenario reported in the later 18th century press involved a person with a prosthetic limb, typically a wooden leg, competing against an opponent who had some kind of handicap imposed upon them to slow them down, but were not themselves physically impaired. So, for example, the press reported in March 1802 that two men had staged a race of 100 yards along Lambeth Street in London, one wearing a cork leg, which was one of the sort of more advanced prosthetics available at the time, and the other person pushing a coach wheel to slow him down. The race, it said, was run by the cork leg man, as he was called, by 10 yards after the wheel became stuck in a rut. In most lurid cases, and most sort of exploitative, if you like, the disabled competitor was pitched against an animal opponent. So in 1762, there are reports of a race run at the Newmarket Racecourse in Berkshire for the staggering sum of £500 between a wooden-legged walker and what the papers referred to as a hamstringed hog. The contest was, it said, was won by the pig after the man's leg broke, which is a common theme in some of these stories. A further example described a contest between a young, healthy, yet wooden-legged man against an elderly man aged 70, staged in a field near Clapton in 1798. Again, the amount of the bet was substantial, some £200. And once again, the disabled competitor lost after breaking his wooden leg, a mishap that the papers later alleged to have been contrived in order to fix the outcome of the race. These races seem to explore the nature of disability as a limitation on a person's ability by comparing physical impairment with other kinds of sporting handicap. And they were characterised by the inventiveness of the wager. So the oddity of the contrast between the two competitors was seen as key to raising crowds for these events and for earning press coverage and for raising money in the bet. This image here shows a wooden leg from the early 19th century, similar to that worn by some of the competitors I'm talking about here. So these races then don't often involve two people with disabilities competing against each other. Contests involving competition between people with disabilities took different forms in this period. We have several accounts from the 1780s onwards of cricket matches staged between teams of amputees. Cricket was a sport which was developing as a popular team game in southern England from the middle of the 18th century onwards. In July 1783, the Gazetteer and New Daily Advertiser reported on a most extraordinary cricket match which was to be played on Tuesday next week at Blackheath, 11 men on one side. They consisted of 11 men with one arm and 11 men with a wooden leg each for a bet of £10 a side. It is expected a great concourse of people will attend. A similar match was staged in August 1796 during the Napoleonic Wars, involving wounded sailors from the Greenwich Hospital. And these amputee cricket matches occur sort of time every so often through the late 18th and early and through the 19th century as well. Matches involving ex-servicemen may have had a patriotic function and contributed to the popular image of the wounded soldier as a kind of national hero in the era of the Napoleonic Wars. Accepting disability as an honourable sacrifice and facing the loss of a limb with quiet stoicism. Arguably, sport could have been used as a means of showing how wounded veterans defied the limitations of their disablement. The next slide isn't showing, but I was going to show you a report from of one of these matches from Birmingham in 1863, which has a kind of curious tone to the reporting. There's a great deal of admiration for the cricketers involved, particularly the fielding skills of the team with one arm. It's always a team of one-armed men against a team of one-legged men. But it then goes on to say that when the wooden-legged team was batting, the crowd roared with laughter when the players fell over as they ran between the wickets. So there's this sort of curious combination of admiration for the skills of the competitors with this idea of a team of disabled players being a kind of form of entertainment, something slightly comical about that to the sort of mid-Victorian crowd. The other kinds of contests we find between disabled participants are boxing matches or other kinds of fighting. Unlike the cricket matches I was talking about, which had a kind of slightly could have a kind of respectable patriotic side to them, the boxing bouts involving amputee participants often were described in different terms as having a kind of illicit, disorderly side to them, drawing crowds of poor and vagrant people. And accounts of these fights drew on another 18th century cultural stereotype of the disabled male as being tough and prone to violence. Rather than being seen as vulnerable, male disabled beggars were often portrayed as threatening in 18th century newspapers. So to give you one example amongst many, in September 1797, the community of Edenham in Lincolnshire, it said, had been menaced by the idle and disorderly wooden leg-wearing James Shenham and his wife, who had threatened destruction to the town and neighbourhood. So a whole community sort of in fear of this disabled beggar and his wife. We find many examples in the 18th century press of assaults perpetrated by disabled beggars. We find organised fights between disabled participants reported ever so often in the late 18th century press. So on the 3rd of October 1751, there was a report of a remarkable trial of manhood, as the paper called it, in London's St James's Park between two cripples who had but one leg between them both. The double amputee, he was also recorded a black man, was knocked to the floor by his opponent, whereupon he discarded his two wooden legs, and it says he manfully fought on his stumps. The encounter, it said, was obstinate and bloody, and lasted 15 minutes, at the end of which victory declared itself in favour of the African. Similarly, in May 1792, there were reports in the press of a boxing match planned between two disabled beggars in Islington, which was a rural parish just outside of London at this time, attended by several thousand people, mostly drawn from the urban poor. But it was called off due to a disagreement about the bets. So, through newspapers then we can get build up a colourful picture of sporting events involving disabled competitors in 18th century England. But this material is problematic and it raises questions about how we should interpret this, what kind of interpretation should we give to these kinds of narrative. The motives of the people involved might have varied, and we have to allow that for differences in motive between spectators, between the participants themselves, and between the organisers of these kinds of spectacles. It was widely reported in this period that the 18th century English were lovers of novelty and strange sights. And I think first and foremost, these events need to be seen in the context of this taste for novelty and the unusual. So the oddity of going to see amputees compete may have been part of the appeal for spectators. And this is part of an 18th century culture that was comfortable with the idea of disability as a source of entertainment or amusement. So aside from these kinds of sporting wagers, we find many, many other examples of this. So ranging from jokes to various theatrical spectacles that objectified the disabled body as a source of fascination and mockery. So we have reports of wooden-legged ballets, of crutch dances, which were a particular form of theatre, and of various comic performances, such as the rather dubious-sounding Hamlet in a cork leg and his one-eyed Queen Mother, which was performed in Leeds at the turn of the 19th century. Sadly, no copies of this survive. These entertainments, I think it's important to stress, appealed as much to the educated elite as they did to the illiterate poor. The most notorious example, of course, is the freak show. And there's a good deal of overlap, I think, between the sporting events described in the newspapers and the freak shows of 18th century England, where people with various unusual bodily characteristics were displayed to the public. So both of them catered to a taste for novelty and the unusual. They took place in similar locations, in fairgrounds, taverns, and on fields around the outskirts of towns. And they were fueled by drink and a shared potential for disorder. Indeed, many 18th century disabled performers who exhibited themselves publicly demonstrated sporting prowess as part of their routines. So the German entertainer Matthew Buchinger, who came over to England in about 1716 in the to come to the court of King George I, was a man who was born without arms and legs and displayed a variety of skills through his public shows, including playing skittles, throwing a sword, and shooting a gun at a target, as well as virtuoso musicianship and skills in painting. But while some may have attended sporting events or human exhibitions in order to gawp at the physically different. It's not necessarily true, I think, to see disabled performers or competitors merely as the exploited victims of the cruel tastes of others. For some, the public demonstration of their talents may have been an opportunity to challenge negative associations between disability and devaluation. The most successful of those who exhibited themselves in the 18th century maintained a strict control over their own image. So people like Matthew Buchinger were very careful in the way in which they were portrayed, and routinely challenged the idea associating his being born without arms or legs with an idea of inferiority. So he constantly emphasised his skills. He painted a lot of images in this period, and he always signed it as Matthew Buchinger, born without arms and legs, married four times and had 12 children. So there's constant assertion of himself as a virile man, as a successful entrepreneur. Likewise, those nameless amputee men who ran races for wages or who turned out to play cricket may have done so partly to challenge others' low expectations of their abilities. Admiration, as I mentioned earlier, was an important part of these newspaper reports, as well as fascination. So in the example I began with at the beginning of the talk about the man racing around St. Paul's Churchyard, the newspaper report placed a great deal of emphasis on the amputee runner's agility, which he described as truly astonishing. What's clear from some of these contests is that they seem to attract a lot of money in bets. Now, some of these sums were probably exaggerated, but although we don't know how much of this actually went to the participants, it could be possible at least that those who participated may have done so as a means of supplementing their income due to the lucrative nature of these occasions. Indeed, although evidence is rather patchy, there's some signs from the newspaper material that some of these events might have been organised by the disabled participants themselves. For example, there's a report in 1799 of a challenge laid down by a wooden-legged man who would take on any opponent in the kingdom. It said it's a wooden-legged man from Buttermere in Westmoreland, in the Lake District, who offered to run against any man in the kingdom of whatever age, weight or size, provided that he could choose the ground. So, issuing the challenge himself, he may well have wanted to sort of use this as a way of sort of earning a living. So, I'll say a few words to conclude. Histories of disability in sport that begin with the modern Paralympic movement overlook the role of sport in the lives of disabled people before Ludwig Guttmann's innovations at Stoke Mandeville after World War II. And this paper has talked about the hidden history of disabled people's involvement in sporting contests long before then, back in the late 18th century. We should not see in the 18th century reports of races, cricket matches and fights the origins of modern disability sport. I think it would be anachronistic to do so, not least because sport itself was very different in the 18th century compared to the present. Modern disability sport, as we know it, developed out of a particular set of medical ideas which saw the value of sport and exercise for rehabilitation. And this idea is completely absent in the 18th century. There's no concept of sport as offering a therapeutic value for disabled people in particular, apart from sort of very general advice that exercise was good for anybody's health. Instead, as we can plainly see from the examples I've used, the emphasis is on spectacle and novelty. So this may lead us to see these events as part of a range of cruel sports that were enjoyed by our ancestors. You can see a kind of continuity from bear baiting to cricket matches involving one-armed men against one-legged men. And that might be true, I think, up to a point. But while there may have been an element of exploitation or derisive laughter to these events, there's also some signs of admiration and indications that disabled performers might have been prepared to exploit their talents for their own ends. 18th century newspaper reports of this kind are not really the best starting point for looking at more positive attitudes towards disability in the past. But what they do show us, I think, is some of the ambiguity surrounding representations of disability in times and centuries gone by. Sport, I would argue, is therefore a good place to think about the complexity of attitudes towards and think about the different experiences of disability in the past. Thank you very much.